Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Sunday, March 13th, 2011. I'm Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
You know, and as we were planning, Yvonne, you know, we're going over the topics, and Yvonne ends by saying, and of course, I assume you're going to do your usual bi-yearly rant on daylight savings time. So, right. Yes, goddamn it, we're recording this on Sunday, just a few hours after you're supposed to spring forward. And
just to let you know, you're talking. I'm going with you on this. This is very annoying as well to me. All right, this time I gotta say that you're getting me on your camp right now. However, I don't think I'll start ranting about it. But yes, I also like. Oh, what the fuck? What's with this damn?
I'm not going to spend like 15 minutes on this or anything, but like, you know, it's just inane because, hey, first of all, like you're changing what you do. The actual effect right now is that everybody in some sort of mass psychosis decides to do everything an hour earlier, and they fool right. themselves to do that by moving the clock forward an hour. And right. Guess what, kids? Time doesn't change. You're not actually fucking saving any daylight. You're not doing anything of that sort, you know? And then, you know, everybody in the, like, you add up the, like, 5 minutes of lost time everybody has changing their goddamn clocks. You add up the inefficiencies people have because of all the people who miss freaking appointments the day after this happens or get screwed up in one way or another, you know, and I've even seen a few reports on the internet, and therefore it must be true that it's bad for your health in some way or other.
Then it must be true.
It must be true. You know, it was on the internet.
Yes.
But, you know, it all comes down to me at the very end of the story it makes no freaking sense.
I will say this. You know, having daylight earlier, okay, here's the one thing. If we want to leave the clock, I would leave them at one fucking hour, not change it the whole fucking year period. The only beneficial time it would be is if we had, because especially on the shorter days in the winter, is to have some early daylight, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, in the late fucking afternoon... if it turns dark at 5 or it turns dark at 6, what the fuck cares? At that time, you're awake. You have your fucking headlamps if you need them in the fucking car. Who the hell gives a crap? Okay? You know, it's just... I think maybe businesses think it's better because people will go out more. Well, I mean, I've noticed, for example, I will say this. In the summer, I usually stay longer at the office.
Yeah.
Because it isn't dark. It's right. Like when it's been December and it's like all of a sudden at 5 o'clock it's dark, I'm like, well, what the fuck am I doing here? Let me go home.
Exactly. Know? Yes.
I do admit, yes, that I do that. But honestly, so what?
Yes. And the thing is, it's all playing with psychological bullshit as well. It's like, look, you know, if you want to make. Yeah, if you want to change around what your work hours are, change around what your freaking work hours are. You know, come in a little earlier, leave a little later, whatever. You know, that's an entirely separate issue. What bothers me about the whole thing
is that a lot of people don't have the option.
I know. But from the employer's point of view, whatever.
Right.
But like, what bothers me about the whole thing is the pretending. That time is changing when what's actually happening is you're convincing everybody to come in earlier. That's what's really going on right now. And then come in later. And when they change it back, it's just really, come on. Like if you want everybody to come in earlier, just come in earlier,
right.
You know, like if you want like school to start earlier, let school
start earlier,
you know, people aren't like, people can figure that out, you know, and supposedly there's, you know, it saves fuel, there's other kinds of, come on, bullshit, you know, and maybe it does, but like there are other ways to achieve the same result that aren't stupid. Anyway.
All right.
Okay. Annual rant done. Biannual rant, I should say.
Biannual.
You know, but there's both spring forward and fall back that need ranting.
Right.
yes. You know, it makes me want to, like, move to Indiana or Arizona where they don't do this shit.
Even in Puerto Rico, we didn't do this. You see, the one thing is I never had to do this. When I was a kid, Puerto Rico didn't do this shit.
Yeah, and there are lots of parts of the country. Basically, like, I mean, Indiana is an outlier here, but basically, the closer to the equator you get, the less likely you are to do this nonsense, because, of course, the amount of daylight you get doesn't vary as much.
Which is why I don't understand why the fuck we do it in Florida.
Because Florida's really deepest true desire is to be like Ohio.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, of course.
Yeah, so anyway, next.
Next.
So, you know, usually when Yvonne and I discuss topics for the show, you know, I put out some ideas, Yvonne puts out some ideas, there's some overlap on big stories, and then there are a few things that one of us have thought of that the other. This time, you know, we were 4 for 4. We had an exact match because I think the stories were pretty obvious this week. We got Japan, we got Wisconsin, and we got Libya.
Right.
So, which one do you want to do first?
Well, let's go to Japan. I gotta go. Okay, so let's see if your physics degree is worth anything. I don't know if any of you know.
I'm pretty sure it's not.
But you got a bachelor's degree in physics, right?
Of which I remember almost nothing.
Why the fuck did you study physics again?
I liked it. I still like it. I miss physics. Here's the thing. Like, fundamentally, my mindset is like a science mindset. Like, I somehow got diverted along the way, and
right.
I don't do science for a living. And I'm in an industry where, like, it's much more about engineering.
Right.
And, you know, at heart, I'm a scientist. I want to be doing research and figuring out things sort of pure and abstract and not necessarily too tied to, like, concrete uses and things like that. So, you know, it's a struggle. You know, it's a mindset struggle because that's, you know, when I was in college, you know, I was like, you goddamn freaking engineers. It's the scientists. That's where it is, you know, but.
Right.
Yeah. You know, whatever. Anyway, I like science. I like physics. I miss it. I miss the math. I miss that kind of stuff. However, it's been like, what, I don't know, 15, 20 years? So I don't know this shit anymore. So go ahead and ask the question. The main thing is, like,
the nukes.
The nukes, but I'll say one thing right off the bat. There was a hoax map going around that showed, like, potential fallout if there was a complete meltdown. That showed a big cloud of stuff going over across the Pacific to the western United States, and it was labeled with radiation dosages that, if true, would represent, you know, the entire west coast of the United States being dead within a week.
Oh, God, who the hell put that out? That's sheer nonsense.
Exactly. It's sheer nonsense. And I've seen, like, discussion groups and, like, you know, Brandy on a regular basis subscribes to a discussion group that's, like, the main audience is, like, prospective moms and people with young kids and stuff like that. And apparently there are just tons of people on there just completely freaking out saying, should I leave? Should I, like, pick up my family and go inland?
Go where? I mean, even if that were true, where the fuck would you go? What? South America?
Anyway.
Europe? I guess Europe is the only option, I guess,
A complete total bullshit. Look, the bottom line is, even if the worst possible scenario, like, let's harken back to Chernobyl. The reality of Chernobyl was that it was a very, very bad thing in the immediate local area. There was a cloud of radiation that spread throughout Eastern Europe, and caused within that zone an elevated rate of cancers. Over yes. the course of many years. Right. And so there was a noticeable effect if you lived within, you know, I don't know, a couple hundred miles of Chernobyl.
Correct.
That you had a slightly elevated chance of cancer Various types of
cases. Cases it was, I mean, if it was close.
Well, it depends how close you were and which way the winds were going and all kinds of things.
Right.
And but in the end, the radiation cloud, there were measurable effects of the Chernobyl incident in practically every country in the world. It was just a question of what degree. And outside of that area that was relatively close to the incident, there, yes, if you had an appropriate radiation detecting equipment, you could detect that there was something strange going on, but there were not noticeable health effects in most of the world. And just to put it clear, like that, yeah, there are some people have said, well, yeah, you know, even in the United States, there were noticeable health effects through Chernobyl, but it might take the effect of like 2 or 3 additional cancer cases per year out of millions.
Well, guys, yeah, but everybody keeps forgetting, we used to test nuclear weapons in the fucking atmosphere years ago, for God's sakes.
Yes.
Okay? I mean, you know, how many did we drop? Like, how many did we do in Arizona, in the fucking Pacific, out in the air? I mean, we did a whole bunch of them, and not just us, but the Russians, too. And we're all here. Okay? So,
although there is apparently now, because of that, there's like, you know, if you find a dead body, one of the ways that you can tell how old the person was are whether there are traces of the radiation of those above ground tests.
Well, I'm sure there is.
But the point is, it's not something to panic over,
right?
In the way that, you know, there's some, yeah, well, and you know, as usual, what happens here is I saw one person on a blog quote something from one of their commenters, and I can't source this, I'm sorry, but they pointed out that this probably sums up, you know, part of the problem in terms of people discussing this, which was one of the commentators says, you know, everything I know about nuclear power, I learned on The Simpsons.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, that could be a problem.
You know, look, the the bottom line is that something people don't understand, so people panic. Look, okay.
Well, put it into that perspective. If Homer Simpson could run a nuclear power plant and the world was not annihilated in The Simpsons, you should be thinking about it. I'm sure that most probably the people there were more competent than Homer.
Yeah. So, anyway, you know, look, it's time. Let's take a break. We'll get back. We'll talk a little bit more about the earthquake and the tsunami, because we sort of jumped straight into, like, this nuclear meltdown happening without giving any context, assuming everybody has context. Hopefully you all had context. But let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue. Enjoy your, like, thing of whatever it's going to be.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
Okay, we're back. Now, to properly contextualize, there was a huge earthquake in Japan this week.
Apparently the strongest ever to hit Japan, period.
And I believe what they said was it was the 7th largest earthquake ever recorded by, you know, modern recording equipment. So in the last 100 years or so.
Right.
And so there have been bigger. But one of the differences, of course, is like most of the time, and there are unfortunate exceptions, of course, you know, when you get your big earthquakes, they happen to be not where there are lots and lots of people.
Right.
This time, it was off the coast of Japan. There was a big earthquake, affected large portions of the country. The earthquake itself, you know, caused some damage, but Japan is very prepared for earthquakes. There are, you know, lots of videos you can see of big skyscrapers swaying visibly, but being fine in the end, right. Because they're designed for this stuff. But then most of the subsequent damage, I shouldn't minimize. The earthquake caused a lot of damage. But
not the kind of damage that the frickin' tsunami caused.
Right. The dramatic damage was the tsunami that was caused because this was offshore. There have been, I'm sure everybody has seen, or probably everybody listening to this has seen, the very dramatic pictures of the tsunami waves coming in and completely overwhelming towns.
There is, on the current, and maybe by the time that you listen to this, it won't be on the front page, but there is on the New York Times, if you look at some of the coverage of Japan, they did put a place where they put pictures already of before and after satellite photos.
Yeah.
Okay. Of the place, so you can look at those on the you will find those on the New York Times. It won't be on the cover. It's just
And I've seen those satellite pictures, but to me, by far the most dramatic stuff is just the views of the waves coming actually in and picking up houses and cars and.
What are the differences between like the tsunami happening in like Japan versus in other places that are less developed? I mean, they had freaking live video of the fucking waves coming in.
Yeah.
Okay. You were like, they did warn as many people. They did have warnings, so a lot of people did evacuate. Okay. And they had live video coverage of the freaking waves coming in and. It's just nothing short of stunning. I mean, just how that freaking, it lifted just lifted everything. I think that some of the most dramatic coverage that I saw was about the Sendai airport and how it just quickly became an island. And the one thing is that if you look at these pictures, everything is just gone. It's gone, everything.
In some of these pictures, and I know we're talking to people who've probably seen them, but they're pictures of it looks like the tide coming in, except on the tide are like houses floating by, like hundreds of them, this entire town gets washed away. You know, and some of the most dramatic to me are where you see like the water starting to come in and there's a road with cars going back and forth.
Right.
And then you see the water coming towards the road. And then in almost every case, you see the camera pull away before the camera all washes over the road full of cars that are driving, trying to get away from the damn thing, And there have been the usual pictures of the person crying where their house used to be and stuff like that. But very dramatic. There's the death toll is expected. It's already in the thousands. It's expected to probably go over 10,000. There are entire towns where there's more than half the town missing. It doesn't look good for the missing in this kind of situation. Having said that, compared to say the Indonesia quake, the death toll is probably going to end up being much, much, much less because like you said, it's a more developed place. The tsunami warnings were more advanced. People knew what to do. So lots and lots of people did evacuate and get out of the way. So when you had the Indonesian earthquake / tsunami,
there were no warnings whatsoever.
When was that? Like 6 years ago at this point?
Yes, five, six years ago.
The death toll was over 100,000. You're probably not going to get anywhere near that high this time around because of that preparedness and the effectiveness of the warnings, which is, a good thing. But it's still, going to be pretty massive here.
One of the things that I noticed is that I'm looking at, some of the stuff is that, this is typical in California as well, that a lot of the construction, I've noticed that a lot of people in California, they build the better housing to withstand construction is actually not to build concrete or brick. It's actually a lot of people build wood.
Yeah.
Okay? Because it is a lot, it flexes a lot better, so therefore when an earthquake hits, it'll resist that. The problem is that if a tsunami comes in, well, it just all got washed away. It's just, I mean, that's one of the things. So you see that the structures that remained intact and a lot of the things are like, say, for example, the airport, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the airport was a steel and concrete construction, so that's stood. But everything else around it was just wiped out, gone. Everything. I mean, it's like somebody just took an eraser and just fucking blanked out everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've just never seen anything like this. It's just unbelievable. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly humbling watching this kind of thing, because you see, like, you know, when you've got this kind of force of water coming in, there's nothing to do. Nothing to do but run, you know,
and
try to get to higher land if you can. But if you can't, you're screwed. It's not, you can't fight it. There's nothing you can do. Talking about the nukes again, there are people saying, you know, oh, well, why would you build a nuke in a, you know, in an area prone to earthquakes, blah, 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 blah. You know, look, first of all, everywhere's prone to something.
Right.
But there are of course some places that are more at risk and less at risk. But you know, in Japan, the whole freaking country is prone to earthquakes.
Correct.
So it's not like you can really put them somewhere else. You know, I think I've heard a number of people commenting about like this is be the final death blow to nuclear power.
I highly doubt that. I mean, I think that one of the things is that a lot of the recent new designs are some of the oldest like freaking nuclear power plants that are out there are 50 years old.
You know, here's the thing, though. Like, the debate about things like nuclear power generally has nothing to do with the facts. It's all about emotion and fear.
Right. Well, I think the one thing about it is just quite plain and simple. I mean, some of the new reactor designs, the newest reactor designs have been around probably the last 10, 15 years or designed, so this kind of stuff is irrelevant, okay? You know, that's been one of the biggest changes in terms of reactor design. But hey, what do you do when you built these plants 50 years ago? They had all the contingencies. They certainly right now at this point, even though it is a crisis, I believe that even though somewhat disastrous, this is not going to turn into Chernobyl. Okay. That's right. What I think. So, I mean, you know, some people were discussing the fact, let's face it. I mean, when Three Mile Island, I mean, right now, you know, what happened? I mean, it wasn't the end of the earth either. Obviously a lot of people are trying to work on trying to contain this and doing the best they can right now. And it is an emergency. I'm not minimizing that. But yet at the same time, it's like, look, what if it was a chemical plant, for example, that was there? What if it was, I mean, you could have a whole bunch of other things that environmentally could be even far more catastrophic than this.
Well, I mean, and, you know, lots of our listeners may not be old enough to remember Bhopal, but
for example,
there's lots of dangerous things in the world, and you know, it's very easy. People get really scared about the things they understand the least.
Right.
They get really scared about things that are, you know, high visibility.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily match with what really are the biggest risks. And you know, if you look carefully at nuclear power versus other types of power, it's still got lots of benefits. You know, it ain't perfect. I'm not at all claiming it's perfect, but I mean, you know, in the end, it's probably cleaner than like coal and, you know, a lot of the fossil fuel based things.
It's cleaner than practically everything else, even after all the problems that it does have.
I mean, there are probably a few exceptions like hydro and wind and stuff like that.
Right.
But, you know, but still, you know, anyway, I guess back to the wrap up the earthquake real quick. There's not much more to say than other than oh my god, you know. And Japan has asked for help, but it's as a you know highly developed first world country for the most part, it's going to be able to take care of itself here. They're asking you know more for short term.
They wanted more helicopters, for example. Yeah. You know, they asked for that. They wanted more. I'm sure that they can use every search and rescue team that anybody can put together, even though they have a lot of them, for example. Stuff like that. But in terms of supplies itself, it's not that they're short on that. It's just, I mean, when you look at a map and you look at the vastness of where the tidal wave hit in Japan, it's just that's the other thing that's just incredible. It's just. It was such a wide area, so many towns, so many small towns and cities that got hit. I mean, that's the one thing that's just stunning. I was looking at the map; it's just unbelievable how wide an area got hit.
Oh yeah.
So.
Japan will pull out of it. But definitely massive event here makes everyone think about what. How can you prepare even better for these things in the future? I'm sure there's going to be work on making things like tsunami warnings even more robust. After Indonesia, they added a lot there. Like there were a lot more tsunami detection buoys in the ocean. Things like that have been added since last time around.
I think
the infrastructure has been beefed up for the warnings that come out. Etc. All of these things are continuous improvements. I don't know. It certainly makes me think too about earthquake preparedness here. Like Seattle, where I am, is in a zone that occasionally sees earthquakes. We're not like California, where you get small earthquakes all the time, but we are in the area where every couple hundred years there's a catastrophically large earthquake. And we have, for instance, here already done some to like some of the pieces of furniture have the little straps that hook them to the wall so that they won't fall over on you if there's an earthquake. But we haven't done that to everything. We just haven't gotten around to it. And this is the kind of thing that says, maybe I should get around to it, But anyway, let's take a break for the poem of the week. We'll come back with Libby in Wisconsin. We'll be back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tel Motel.
From Dutch Baby Combo, by Amber Nelson. Eggs to whisk and milk will bake like warm baby chick baby. Chickadee at the cock's crow of a breakfast nook struck in a sucky track of sad stacks. Too warm, a lovelorn worm to mourn.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Hello, Yvonne. We are back.
We're back.
Yvonne.
We're back and better than ever.
Yvonne.
Hello. Hello.
Yvonne,
I'm
Yvonne,
here.
Yvonne.
I'm here. I'm here.
I think I may have lost Yvonne.
I hear you.
Let's see if we can get Yvonne back.
Hello?
Okay, you hear me. I can't hear you.
Hello?
Oh, there you are.
I don't know what the heck. Well, that was weird.
I might have muted you.
Oh, okay. Well, In which case,
our listeners could hear you, too, and this is comical.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know. I hit the volume button, and all of a sudden I could hear you. So maybe I muted you. I don't think
you muted me. I think you may have muted me, yes.
I don't know. I'm an idiot. Anyway.
Okay. I'm like, oh,
or maybe you were really missing. I don't know.
You were
in a cone of silence.
I was in the cone of silence. Brownie, what do you think? Was I in the cone of silence? I don't think my dog agrees. But anyway.
Okay. He would only care if it was a cone of ice cream.
Actually, yogurt.
Yogurt. Okay.
My dog loves yogurt. I don't know why I even said that, because he'll start just dripping in saliva right now because I said the word.
Okay. Wisconsin, Libya. What do we do first?
Libya.
Libya.
Libya. Libya. So, no-fly zone.
You know, the Arab League has asked for a no-fly zone, And apparently we...
Are they going to send planes to do this? I'm just...
No, they want other people to do it. And apparently the administration... I have not seen a lot about this because some of it happened last night and, yeah, I didn't get to it. But, you know, apparently the administration put out a statement, you know, we're not committing to anything at this point yet, I don't think. But we basically, you know, said positive words about the Arab League in their statement. I mean... And there are a lot of people calling for this no-fly zone thing. And I'm like, what the fuck? Really? I mean, look, I have sympathy here. The Gaddafi is fighting back against the rebels very effectively. He's pushed them back into fewer towns. They're clearly on the defensive. He may well end up crushing them and, you know, not going anywhere. And meanwhile, you know, anybody who is involved in this little uprising against him is undoubtedly not going to have a very good time of it, to say the least. But I still think this is an area where, really, do we want to get militarily involved in this?
In another... Oh, God. You know, let's talk about being stretched thin. First of all, I mean, the Japanese did ask for our assistance right now over in Japan, right? So... Could I say something? I am dissing the Libyans, but given the limited resources, if we got to send stuff to Japan or we got to send it to Libya right now, guess where I'm voting for it to go?
Well, they're probably different scales, to be honest. But
different scales? Like, really? Okay, you know, we have 11 aircraft carriers in total. Okay, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So okay. One aircraft carrier is a significant chunk of what we have, yes.
Right. So in order to really properly enforce a no-fly zone with our air power there, I'd say we probably need three there, based off of there, on a full-time basis. Can we really stretch ourselves to do this right now and spend this kind of money? And we're the only guys that have got the air power forward deployment, unless the Germans and the Italians are going to start sending planes, and the Greeks are, I don't know who the heck else, and the French, and like ferry them from their place and refuel them in midair, fly them down there, and then bring them back. And I don't see any of them volunteering, jumping up and down to volunteer for this shit.
Well, you know, the way these things usually work is those countries like Italy and stuff would say, okay, you can land in our country and you can use it as a base and stuff like that, rather than, you know, providing resources of their own. That's not always the case, but that has happened, you know, in the past. I don't know. I think the logistics here, it's a huge country to enforce a no-fly zone. If we do so, we're clearly taking sides, and I think we know we're taking sides anyway, but, you know, we're inserting ourselves. I think the rebels have actually said, you know, they would welcome that kind of involvement, but of course they don't want anybody on the ground afterwards. But, you know, the bottom line is, look, the way you start a no-fly zone is you make attacks against things like...
That's right! Like the airports and the planes and the air traffic control places and blah, blah, blah. So basically, we got to launch a fucking attack on Libya.
Yeah, and look, you know, the bottom line here, taking over another country's airspace is an act of war, period. You know, and so... Really? I don't know. I keep like sort of shaking my head in disbelief every time, you know, this gets really discussed.
And then people are saying, well, the rebels are getting demoralized that we haven't gotten involved. And I'm like, oh, God. I'm like, here's the one thing I think my perspective on this. On almost every country that we've gotten involved, we wind up people hating our guts. Okay. If they hate our guts whether we get involved, or they hate our guts if we don't. And I'm just like, honestly, I'm just sick of it. I mean, I really am. I mean, I'm like, what the hell?
And look, the counterexamples everybody gives about, like, you know, Japan and Germany, how many decades have we been in those places? You know?
Jesus Christ, we've been there for 70 years. I don't know. I'm like, look, and I have a lot of sympathy for the rebels in Libya about what they're, what, you know, at their cause, but yet at the same time, I'm not sure. I mean, short of going to war in the Libya, whether there is anything that we could do. Well, and I'm like, and I'm like, people expecting us to go and engage into another war right now, I think is nuts.
I keep thinking a couple things. One is, haven't we learned? You know, and I think, yeah, I mentioned last week I'm reading George Bush's little book, and I was reviewing some of the stuff about when we first went into Afghanistan, and there are a lot of justifications for what we did initially, but then, you know, it bogs down and drags out and blah, blah, blah. And of course, Iraq was a complete fiasco. Right. But it's like, first of all, if we had nothing else on the table, maybe this is something that would be possibly warrant consideration. I still think it probably would be a bad idea. But at least it would warrant consideration.
Right.
Given where we actually are right now, it seems like just another, I don't know, on top of everything else, really, I don't know.
Our armed forces are tired. They're exhausted. They've been fighting a frickin' war right now, ongoing for, Jesus, for 10 years. I think this has got to be the longest they've ever been. I mean, maybe Vietnam, they were engaged longer?
No, the longest U.S. war already.
The longest U.S. war already. They are tired. Afghanistan. They are battered. I mean, you know, honestly, I mean, sending them out again on something like this, I just feel like, I mean, I don't think it's fair to them, man. I mean, we're just asking way too much. We are asking way too much out of them. That's, and I'm like, and it, yeah, I don't like Gaddafi too, but I'm like, well, there's a lot of other people I don't like either. We're not going to start a fucking war against them either. Let's make a fucking list. You start a fucking list of all the people we don't get along with right now. We're going to launch a war against. Well, how about Chavez? You're they kept saying it's going to. They kept saying that he's since he's buddy buddies with Gaddafi, you know, that he was helping him out or something or whatever. Who the fuck cares? Like, honestly, I don't know. I just don't.
Hey,
see
what if you're not with us, you're against us.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of like his philosophy. I don't know.
That was W, of course.
Oh, that was him. Well, that would be. That sounds like something he would say. I don't know. I just don't see how we can. I just don't see how we can do this right now. That's the only thing. Somebody else is going to tell me the Italians are going to take the lead. I'm like, then okay. Well,
honestly, also let's talk about how effective it would it be at achieving the goals. Like, if the goals are to actually, like, enable the rebels to win here, like, even if you take air power out of the equation, Gaddafi's still in a better position. He's got, you know, a decent amount of, you know, power and influence that he can exert on the ground. You know, it's by no means, you know, if we did a no-fly zone, all of a sudden, you know, Gaddafi's out the next day. That's unclear. You know, unless we decided to insert ourselves even more and target him directly, you know, but.
Yeah, well, hey, I know I'm with you.
Okay. Seems like it is probably time for a break. Let's take a break. We'll be back and talk about Wisconsin in the lovely state of Wisconsin. We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
And here we are. So Wisconsin, Wisconsin. So the latest development was basically they took the union busting bits out of the bill that was under consideration that, you know, the Democratic senators were not coming back into the state for to prevent a vote on, and put them into a separate bill that did not require the same, it did not have the same quorum requirements, and they passed it. And it's, you know, has the governor signed it already? I don't know. Anyway, it's going to become law.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I believe so. I believe you're
right. And so now there are lots of demonstrations against the bill. We've talked a bit before about how the governor appears to have overplayed his hand somewhat. I mean, he got his bill done, but it appears to have been a very unpopular move in the state, and is probably going to hurt his reelection chances, let's say. Although he's got long enough, they're trying to recall him and stuff too, but so we'll see. Yeah, let me state for the record.
He's got a good shot of being recalled, I got to be honest with you, with the percentage opposition that I'm seeing in the numbers to the bill. I mean, this is like, I mean, you want to talk about a Pyrrhic victory. I mean, this is one of them. I'm just, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how certain people just will go all out for a certain victory on something, you know, and they get so lost in like this winning because they don't want to compromise that they don't realize how much they fucked themselves by doing it.
Let me state for the record real quick my position on unions, my personal position on unions and how this whole thing should work. First of all, I am not a fan of unions. I don't really like the concept all that much, but I understand it in some cases. I think it should be 100% legal for people to organize themselves in whatever way they see fit, including setting up unions. I think it should be 100% legal for companies to decide that they want to negotiate with the union and to make whatever agreements they want, including agreements that bind their future behavior in terms of how they deal with strikes and things like that. But I believe there is absolutely no place for government or laws in this. So I don't think, for instance, that there should be a law that helps, that defines how a government and a union need to interact with each other. It should be purely a matter of the people organize and the company decides that it's in their interests to negotiate with the union rather than individuals, which they may not, by the way. It, you know, depends on the situation. But, you know, and I think it's perfectly legitimate, for instance, that if a company has not entered into a contract that legally binds them to not do so, that if people go on strike, they just fire everybody's ass and hire new people. You know,
which
now,
we've had people do. I mean, Reagan did do that with the air traffic controllers.
If they have entered into a legally binding contract with the union that says they won't do that, I of course believe that should be binding. But you know, absent that, you know, my bottom line on this is this should be a private endeavor. The union should do whatever. The companies should decide whether or not to engage the union, and what they agree to should be defined by contracts, and then those contracts should be enforceable and binding if they do decide to engage with the unions. And that's where it should be. I think where things get really distorted is when the government gets involved and the government starts, you know, defining the rules of how the union has to interact with the company, how the union has to interact with its members, all of that kind of stuff. That's when it really starts getting bogus. And right now, all of that kind of stuff, actually, there are lots of laws that impact on that. And of course, all those laws came about because of various abuses that happened without those laws. I understand that, but that's still where I see like the problem gets into that distortion when government gets involved. Now, of course, in this kind of case, you're talking about a government,
right?
You know, and so it's all about, you know, how the government is involved. But I think, you know, in this case, you know, it should be a situation of the government should be deciding what to do on a basis of, you know, what's I almost want to say the government should be acting almost as if it was a private entity in these cases. Like, it shouldn't be unduly tying its hands to a union for the sake of the fact that the people in the unions are constituencies that vote for people. It should be, well, what's actually best for the running of the Wisconsin state government? And I don't know what the case is here. And frankly, I don't even know. Do you know, Yvonne, what exactly was in the law that they passed here that I know it restricted collective bargaining, but in what way? Do you know?
It eliminated bargaining for everything except wages, if I remember correctly. That they could still bargain for wages, but I guess not for any benefits.
So, basically,
biggest restriction. I can't remember exactly how they phrased it, but there was something about that even the right for wages had to be reauthorized yearly by the legislature. But yeah, so it just, you know, the main thing is just it removed all the bargaining regarding any benefits.
What it actually binds then is it just tells the government to ignore the union in those cases, right? I mean, there can't be a contract.
That includes anything regarding any benefits, which honestly, it's kind of like, it's very screwy. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, your benefits are a significant part of your compensation. And so, you're restricted
specifically in
wages. So say you could go give people a 10% pay increase, then turn around and like cut the benefits like by a bazillion. And then so what?
And specifically, one of the important factors here is the classic trade-off for public sector employees has always been that you get less in your pay, but more in benefits and more in terms of long-term job security.
Correct.
And that's been the trade-off. Because
one of the things that's happened, like with government, in order, you know, it's like that you wind up with these, even without a union, that the government pays on these civil service pay grades, which you just earn pay and like your is determined basically by your time on the job, et cetera, whatever. And it removes discretion to a certain extent on it. And many reasons why that's happened is because it's so politicized, the environment, if you didn't do it that way, then what kept up happening is that politicians would come in and they would fire the people they didn't like, bring in all their buddies every 4 years, which you see happen even still in the jobs that aren't in that part of the structure. Yep. And, and they just bring in their cronies and pay them whatever they want. So that's why that's why that structure exists. You know, I don't know. You know, the one thing about it is it's just a fucking no-win situation. I mean, if I'm honest. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I'm trying to come up with a better system in my head right now. And private sector. Private sector, you know, it's hit and miss. Might as well throw darts. I mean, you go to some companies where, companies are good about recognizing people, like paying them. You go to other companies that are just as bad as, if not worse, than the government. So,
you know, and I'll put another thing on it. Like, I look at, you know, there have been a lot of people sort of criticizing them for sort of the parliamentary maneuvers that they use to push this stuff through and stuff like that. You know, look, that kind of stuff is all part of the game. That, you know, you're expected, if you are in the legislature, to use everything you possibly can within the rules that apply to either get your stuff done or to block the stuff the other guy wants to do. It's political overreaching. I think he's going to, the governor and many of the people involved in this are going to suffer at the polls the next time around, but I can't be like all upset and say, oh my God, look at the tactics they're using. They're using the rules in such a way to get done what they want to get done. And that's part of how the system works. If you don't like the rules, then change the rules. But, you know, just like we've seen with the filibuster on the federal level, like there was a lot of talk about, like, before this election coming up, that when the new Congress first sat down, they could, with a simple majority, if they did it first thing before anything else, they could completely reform the filibuster. They could get rid of the filibuster. They could change how it works. They could do all kinds of things. They did almost nothing. There were a couple
they
like
did not. That's true.
There were a couple like minor little filibuster rule adjustment things, but nothing that makes any freaking difference. And that's because everybody rallies against it when they're being when their stuff is being stopped by it. But they also at the same time know that at some point the tables will turn and the minority will become the majority and the majority will become the minority. And at that point they'd like it. And so nobody changes it because nobody, everybody's like, yeah, I hate this when I'm on this side of the fence. But once I'm on the other side of the fence again, I'm going to want to have this tool available to me. So the rules and this kind of stuff are all part of the game. So I can't criticize them for that. And like I said, I'm not entirely sure I'm against the move. Like, I don't like the freaking unions. I liked it when Reagan fired the air traffic controllers. I thought that was probably the right thing to do, and in this case, I don't know all the details of Wisconsin politics.
Well,
enough,
remember one thing. The air traffic controllers, if I remember correctly, and I may be wrong, but I remember that they actually, their union contract stipulated that they could not strike.
I believe that was
okay.
The case, yeah.
I believe that was the case. And so the Reagan thing is a little bit different. They had a contract the strike was illegal, as far as I remember correctly, because of their contract. And they decided to go on strike anyway. And that's why the whole thing blew up. That was,
Back to Wisconsin. I think the other thing that people have pointed out is, of course, that the main reason for doing this is, or not maybe the main, but like it, some of them have actually admitted, like it this all came up in a budget context. But the way they actually passed the bill was to state that none of these things actually had any financial implications, so therefore they didn't have the other rule. So it became purely 100% about removing the influence of the unions, which of course ties into removing the influence of a key Democratic constituency, which ties into effectiveness in elections and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And is that dirty pool? Yeah, it is. But everybody plays dirty pool in politics. They're taking the upper hand in that, and because they've got the majority right now, they may, if this is an unpopular act, they may lose their majority next time around, and everything gets undone, a few years down the line or whatever, and it's back to where you were. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out, or more likely, we'll never hear about it again. But in the end, I think it's a question of, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know enough about the specifics of Wisconsin to say whether I really support or not the actual law that happened. But regardless of that, they have been so damn sloppy in pushing this thing through in such a way that, if you look at the polls, this is like one of the most unpopular acts ever to come through. Now, of course, this is exactly what he promised to do when he was running for office. So I don't know why people are surprised, but
It's just maybe here's one thing. I think it's not that you promise something; it's sometimes how you do certain things.
Yes.
I mean, I could promise that, I'm going to change the unions and I'm going to limit their thing. It's one thing if he sat down and negotiated with people and whatever and then tried to negotiate and then it came to an impasse and they couldn't agree on anything. And then, he was like, at least could hold him up and say, listen, I sat down with him and I negotiated with him and we couldn't come to anything.
Whereas in this case, the public sector unions in Wisconsin, actually, when they made – When actual demands were being put on the table in terms of salary, benefits, whatever, the union basically said, okay, we give. We understand there's a crisis. You can have everything you've asked for. Just leave us the right to continue to bargain in the future.
And the guy said, fuck you. And that's where the whole thing just broke apart. And that's why everybody is in the state, according to every poll, and like even some of the stuff I saw, it just thinks the guy is a complete asshole. At least the majority of the people, anyway. I won't say everybody, but apparently a significant majority of the state at this point. So, it's like I told you the story I told you a couple of weeks ago. It's like you need to cut expenses at home. If you show up at home one day, just go. I'm like, honey, not even say anything. find your wife's purse, grab her wallet, take the scissors out, and cut her credit cards without talking to her, I don't think that goes over very well.
No.
Not for nothing, but not in my household. I don't know about yours, but if you try that stunt, even if the end result that you get is that you guys sit down later and cut the credit cards, the fact that you did it that way won't score any points. Let's just put it to you that way.
Yeah. No.
Okay. No. Okay. So that's, I guess, you know. So, all right. So on that note,
I think we're done.
Yeah, I think we're done.
So, as usual, thanks everybody for listening. Email me at avosmay@avosmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, all of that stuff. Tell your friends to listen. We like additional listeners. Listeners are good. And we like you all. And, you know, send us stuff. And, you know, I haven't appealed in a while, so let me do it again. The breaks I have right now are getting a little stale. I want new ones. I don't have time, really, to make new ones myself. If anyone has any ideas, thoughts, stuff, send me little, you know, I'll happily add you to the rotation as long as you've got something interesting and cool and not obscene, you know? So, you know. Anyway, that's it. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.